It's Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and welcome to an hour of science fiction. Later on, a great story from Dimension X, but right now it's the Hall of Fantasy. This episode first heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on May 18, 1953, called The Crawling Thing.
And now, the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the series of radio dramas dedicated to the supernatural, the unusual, and the unknown. Come with me, my friends. We shall descend to the world of the unknown and forbidden, down to the depths where the veil of time is lifted and the supernatural reigns as king. Come with me and listen to the tale of The Crawling Thing.
Quite by chance, I've come upon this little diary of Emery's. The mirror of a man's mind. I shall read you only those parts which concern the experiment. The months which brought him into contact with his ultimate death. Oh, yes. It begins on this page. July 7th. Today, I met Dr. Henry Sindler. I've always recognized him to be one of the greatest research men in this field. I applied for the position of his assistant.
I only hope that he accepted me. It will be a great opportunity for me if I manage to get the position. I remember when he walked out to meet me.
I take it that you are Mr. Bolton?
Yes.
Sindler, Dr. Henry Sindler.
Yes, I know.
Please sit down, Mr. Bolton. It distresses me to see a man like you nervous and shaky. I'm not going to hurt you.
Well, I'm sorry, sir.
Now, you no doubt are aware that I drive my assistants to a state of utter exhaustion, that I expect quite a good deal from them.
Yes, I'm aware of that, Dr. Sindler.
Yes, all right, good. And thank you for coming to see me, Mr. Bolton. I have many other applicants to see before the day is over. If you are accepted, we will notify you.
The Dr. Sindler...
That is all, Mr. Bolton. Good afternoon.
July 11th. I was accepted. He called me this morning and said that he had chosen me to fill the position. Yesterday, I felt sure that I'd been rejected and almost accepted the position with Gates, but something held me back. I am to see him tonight for dinner.
This is Donna Atwell, Mr. Bolton, another member of the research team.
How do you do?
It's a pleasure to meet you, Miss Atwell.
Will you join us in a martini?
Yes, certainly.
The laboratory up in the mountains should be completed by the end of this month. I have a few things to clear up here before we start on this new research. I imagine you're willing to live with me and the rest of my staff?
Oh, yes, by all means, Dr. Sindler.
Yes, excellent.
I'm very interested in knowing what we're going to do.
Tell him, Donna.
Dr. Sindler is endeavoring to discover a method by which he can make plants and animals larger.
Larger?
Yes, Emery.
Well, how?
Every living thing, be it plant or animal, gives off electricity to a greater or lesser degree. By means of the electroencephalograph, science has already discovered the human brain gives off small microvolts of electricity. When a man becomes angry, this charge is strengthened. With the increased flow of electricity, his physical strength is also increased.
Dr. Sindler is looking for the chemical which is released into a man's body, along with adrenaline, which gives a man this added strength and which also increases the microvolts of electricity.
I see.
Your cocktail. Allow me to propose a toast to our work together. May we have success.
July 23rd. The laboratory is finally completed. Sindler and I are going up by car tomorrow. I am impatient to begin. July 24th. We arrived shortly after noon today.
I'll take you on a tour of the building later, Emery. Now I want you to meet the others. Donna, will you and Dr. Henderson come into my office, please?
Yes, Dr. Sindler.
Besides the four of us, the only other persons in the building are the cook and janitor. I dislike having too many people engaged on one problem. You understand, of course.
Certainly.
Miss Atwell and Dr. Henderson have been my colleagues on several other occasions.
Well, the building is perfect, Henry.
Yes, Henry, they've certainly given us everything to work with this time.
Emery Bolton, this is Dr. Paul Henderson. You already know Miss Atwell.
How do you do?
Glad to have you with us, Bolton.
Emery, You are to work on the effects of the unknown chemical which is released into the body at moments of anger or peril along with adrenaline. I shall try to isolate the chemical. You are to discover what effect it has upon the nerves and brain.
August 4th. Sindler has isolated the chemical. He calls it the strength quantity or S quantity. He fed some to a lab mouse.
How much time has passed since the injection?
3 hours, Dr. Sindler.
Let's look at the pen.
I hope we have more success this time.
I think we will.
Maybe I'm wrong, but the mouse does seem to be larger.
It is larger, Donna.
Then we found the formula.
We can't be too sure if it's safe. The other subjects died.
Dr. Sindler?
Yes?
How large will the animal grow?
We have no idea of knowing that, my dear.
Do you think there's any possibility of it growing too large?
What do you mean?
We're changing the size of that animal beyond all proportion to what nature has evolved. Do you think there's any possibility of the subject growing too large for us to handle? That mouse there might grow into some hideous monster that could destroy us all.
Back now to our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Crawling Thing.
I'm here in this seemingly deserted laboratory. In my hands, I hold the diary of Emery Bolton. Though there's nothing in his words that should cause me to feel any alarm, still there's something I feel that causes me to look back over my shoulder into the shadows. I continue with the diary.
August 5th. The animal is three times its normal size. It's killed two other mice.
Emery.
Yes?
How is your part of the research coming?
I've written it down for you. Here.
Let me see. The effect of the S quantity increases the microvolts of electricity, and we go into...
Dr. Sindler.
Yes, what is it, Donna?
Paul wants you in the isolation room immediately.
Why? What's wrong?
I don't know. He just told me to get you.
Oh, come with us, Emery.
I wonder what's happened.
We'll know in a minute. What is it, Paul?
Henry, the mouse died a few minutes ago.
What?
Yes. As you know, the S quantity has an immense effect on metabolism. I imagine the animal wasn't able to stand the strain.
What are we going to do?
We'll try it again. Failure may mean nothing. Perhaps the animal was sick. We're not sure that the strength quantity will kill.
August 9th. Sindler told us to feed the S quantity to another mouse and also to one of the large, hairy banana spiders, a member of the deadly tarantula family, in the cage next to the mouse. I was with Henderson when the feeding began.
Open the cage door.
Right.
I'll set the food in here, like this. All right, close the door.
Mm-hmm.
Now the other one. Open the cage door.
All right.
There. That'll do it.
Paul, do you think the spider will react to it?
I don't know. I imagine so. That spider, I...
What's the matter?
Ever since I was a small child, I've hated them. I get nervous whenever I see one. This type, especially.
You're a scientist, Paul. You should be completely objective in this experiment.
I know I should, but that spider, that hairy, crawling thing... I wish I could forget my fear and hatred of them, but I can't. They always seem so cold. A person feels that they have an unearthly, inhuman intelligence behind their beady little eyes. Of course, that's not possible. I think it's just the same.
I wonder if the S quantity will also increase the size of the brain and its ability to think. Still, August 9th. 4 hours later, the mouse has increased slightly in size, but the growth of the spider has been amazing. Its size has been more than trebled. It's almost as large as a child's fist. August 10th, 3 a.m. Henderson woke me and went into the isolation room where the mouse and spider were kept in a double cage.
Be quiet. I don't want to wake the others. Look at the cages.
Now, what do you... The mouse. What happened to the mouse?
Let's go over to the cage.
The spider has doubled in size again.
I know. And the mouse is gone. Now, look at the partition between the two pens. There isn't any partition.
That's right. It slipped or was moved down to the bottom of the cage.
Then that means
that the mouse and the spider had nothing to separate them.
But what happened to the mouse?
Don't you know, Emery?
Unless
what?
Unless the spider.
And that's just what happened. Another thing, Emery. I don't think the partition slipped down between the two cages. I think that the two holders for it were opened, and then the partition slipped down.
That means you're endowing the spider
with intelligence. Yes, that's right. Remember what I said earlier? What would happen if the S quantity also enlarged the ability of the brain to think? Well, it has happened. That spider will kill. It can think. That hairy, crawling thing can think.
August 10th, forenoon. I didn't get much of a chance to see Sindler before 11. When I did, I discovered Henderson had already told him what had happened in the isolation room. And you know about the spider.
Yes, Emery, I do. Henderson told me earlier.
What do you think about it?
Think? What do you mean?
Don't you think we ought to destroy it?
Destroy it? Of course not. This may be what we're looking for, Emery. This may lead us to success.
But, Dr. Sindler, it might be dangerous.
Yes, it might be. But you remember that the development of the atomic bomb was dangerous, and so is the research going on in countless laboratories across the nation, across the world, Emery.
That spider has intelligence, Dr. Sindler, a crafty, cunning intelligence.
Yes, I know that. We have found a new formula to increase the intelligence and size of an animal. And, Emery, it will increase man's intelligence, too. Our contribution to the science of the world will be invaluable. There's nothing to worry about, absolutely nothing.
August 15th. The spider has grown so large that it cannot be kept in the cage anymore. The isolation room is its pen now. It has the run of the entire room. It's as large as a large dog. I must admit that every time I enter the isolation room, I'm nervous lest that thing should attack me. But it generally stays over in one corner of the room. Apparently, it has no desire to harm us. August 25th. Donna and I had taken a stroll outside the laboratory.
Emery.
Yes?
Emery, I've been with Dr. Sindler for several years. In all that time, he's never made a mistake. That is, up to now.
What do you mean, Donna?
I think he's created something that will only bring evil. That will only... Oh, I wish I had the words to express myself.
I know exactly how you feel, Donna. I've talked to him about this before. I'm going to talk to him again when we get back.
I wish you would, Emery. I wish you would.
What are you doing in here, Emery?
I want to talk to you, Dr. Sindler.
Can't it wait till later?
No. That noise, what...
It's the sound of the spider as it moves closer to us. What did you want to say, Emery?
I'll be quite frank about it, sir. I think we should destroy it.
Why, that's nonsense, Emery.
No, it's not. It's true we may learn something. It's true that we may even succeed in our research. But let's start over again. Let's experiment with something else, something that doesn't look like a monstrous throwback to a prehistoric age. It crawls and slides across the floor with its large, beady eyes always open, staring at you. Let's destroy it. What's the matter?
It's coming towards us. Come with me, Emery. Quickly.
Right. The creature... It was crawling towards us.
I wonder if it can understand us. I wonder if it knows what we're saying.
Either that or it sensed that I was urging its destruction. Maybe I'm wrong, Emery. But I feel there's something malevolent about that spider. I get the feeling that it's waiting for the right moment. Waiting for the time when it will kill us.
Back now to our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Crawling Thing.
I'm beginning to feel some of the terror that Emery Bolton must have felt. I'm beginning to feel the presence of the crawling thing about which he writes through the words upon these pages. The diary continues.
September 8th. The cook and janitor left today. If we remain here, they'll be forced to do all the work they did. Henderson has been acting queerly. There's a strange, haunted look to his eyes. He barely eats at all. Either he's ill physically or mentally. What's the matter with you, Paul?
What do you mean?
You look ill. You're not yourself.
Can you be yourself, Emery? That
crawling monster in the isolation room? Well, can you?
No, not exactly.
Let me tell you something, Emery. My dreams, I see it. My dreams in the dead of night. I see those beady eyes looking for me, trying to pierce the darkness. And I feel drawn to it, as if it hypnotizes me. And I feel that I'm caught in its web, just like a fly, Emery. Just like a fly.
It's only your imagination.
I'm not insane, if that's what you think. And I'm quickly being driven there. Did you ever look at those eyes for any length of time, Emery? Did you ever see the hatred and loathing and evil mirrored in them? I'm not imagining it. I see it. When the opportunity comes, I'm going to destroy it. Sinler or no sinler, I swear to you, I'll kill it.
October 10th. Henderson has been so quiet lately that I know he has some plan in his mind. Some plan that will culminate in the destruction of the spider. Sindler hasn't noticed any change in Henderson. He's engrossed in his work. October 16th. Henderson whispered to me this evening that tonight he will kill the spider. I sit in my room and write this, with only the desk lamp lit. It is almost 11 o'clock now. And I have the feeling that the moment is drawing near. I don't know. I think we may find the answer in the isolation room. Come with me.
You don't mean that Henderson went in there alone?
I'm afraid he did.
But that's against all my orders. Why would he want to go in there?
Let's kill it.
What do you mean?
He hated and feared the spot. We'll see what happened right now.
Here's the key.
We don't need it. The door's open.
Turn on the light.
Good heavens. Back. Back to the other side of the room.
It seems to... to understand you, Dr. Sin.
Probably from the tone of my voice. Now, to examine Henderson. He's dead.
Dead?
Yes. After all, in the spider's original size, the poison could kill a man. Here, give me a hand. Help me get him out of here.
All right.
Look out! The spider's coming toward you.
Help me with Henderson. Hurry!
All right. Let's get out of here.
Hurry, hurry.
Lock the door, Donna.
Yes, of course.
Oh. I don't want that thing to get out of that room.
Don't you think we should destroy it?
No! Henderson was a fool. He went in there to kill the spider. I think the spider sensed it. That's why Henderson's dead. We are still going on with the experiment.
October 17th, we buried Henderson in the graying light of dawn. Even Sindler was quiet. October 18th, I am in charge of feeding it. Donna and I were in the isolation room today when a curious thing happened.
Emery, look.
What's wrong?
The spider. It's crawling over to the table where the S quantity is.
I wonder if...
if what?
The spider's trying to get more of the S quantity. Stop growing now because we stopped the injection.
If it were to get more of the serum, it would grow larger.
Going to get that bottle and take it out of here.
Be careful, Emery.
Don't worry, I will.
Look out!
It won't let me get past.
Maybe we better get out of here. Oh, it's crawling towards the table.
We have to stop it.
We can't. It's lifting one of its legs. What is it trying to do?
Get the bottle, Donna. The bottle of serum.
Knock the bottle to the floor.
It's going to drink that serum.
Let's get out of here.
You're right.
What are we going to do, Emery?
I don't know. I don't know.
I heard some commotion down here. What's the matter?
Spider just got through knocking the bottle of chemical serum to the floor.
But that means
that... that it'll grow larger. I told you we should destroy that thing in there. Now it's too late. We don't know how large it'll get.
Be quiet. I have to think.
That's right. Use your mind now, Sindler, when it's too late. We had a chance to destroy it earlier, but no, you wouldn't have any of that. A man of science, that's what you are. But you're a fool, too, Sindler. A stupid, misguided fool. That thing in there could kill us all.
What's that?
It's trying to break the door down.
We'd better barricade that door. If we don't, it'll break it down in a matter of seconds.
October 24th. Six terrifying days have passed. That creature in the isolation room is out of all proportion. Well, we've barricaded it. The door is weakening. It won't hold up much longer. I called Frank today. We can't leave that thing alone. If it were to get loose, we must destroy it. Cinder has a plan. We've placed explosives just outside the door. It'll give way any minute now.
It's only a matter of minutes now. When it breaks down the door and comes through that doorway, the explosive will automatically go off. I hope we're successful.
Why don't we just leave?
We can't do that. We have to see it destroyed. That's the only way we can be sure.
What if...
If the explosive does not kill it, I don't know what will.
The door is starting to give.
It's starting to come through.
As if I were hypnotized.
I can't move. No.
Look out! Look out!
Even though the last entry in the diary was marked October 24th at 7 in the morning, in my mind I've reconstructed what must have happened after that last entry. There is evidence all around me of the death and destructive power of that hairy, crawling thing. It must have left the building after what happened. I'd better get back to the city and notify the...
In front of me. Something so large. Gigantic eyes looming up at me. I can't move.
Tonight's tale of the unusual, the terrifying, the unknown. Join us again when next we journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy to hear another strange tale of the supernatural. All characters and events portrayed in these programs are fictional, and any similarity to actual events or persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
The Hall of Fantasy, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 18, 1953, on the Mutual Broadcasting System. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVeonier. Now, Dimension X from September 15, 1950, delivering the George Lefferts story, Hello Tomorrow. This turned out to be a great story for radio during its golden era and was repeated twice on the NBC follow-up series to Dimension X, X-1 in 1955 and 1956.
Dimension X, 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 X. Tonight, a story of the future and a star of the future. The story, Hello Tomorrow, and the star, Miss Nancy Olsen, the talented young actress who is currently winning critical acclaim for her performance in one of the outstanding pictures of the year, Sunset Boulevard. Tonight, Miss Olsen becomes the first of a group of the stage and screen's most promising young stars of tomorrow to be invited to appear on the program of tomorrow, Dimension X. It was in the year 1991 that man disappeared from the face of the earth. The third atomic war had ended at last, leaving the land a mass of red radioactive dust, filling the air with gamma rays so deadly that life on the surface was no longer possible. There was only one way out. The few survivors went underground, burrowing their way deep into the earth like hunted moles, hiding from death in huge underground caverns. And it was there in the next 2,000 years that they built the new civilization, a civilization in which the genetic survival of the race came first, and every life and every law was shaped to serve that end. It is to this civilization, in the year of our Lord, 4195 AD, that we take you now.
Yes?
I have a call from the Director of Emotional Stability for the Third Oblong for Professor Lois Burton at the Institute of Genetics.
This is Professor Burton.
One moment. Go ahead, sir. Lois? Listen, darling, good news.
What?
The genetic board has approved our application for marriage.
Oh, so soon?
The tests found our chromosomes perfect. We can marry any time we want. Our offspring should be genetically in the 19th percentile of perfection. What's the matter, dear?
Oh, nothing. I'm just sort of breathless.
You are happy about it, aren't you, darling?
Oh, of course. Terribly happy.
I'm coming right over to the lab. I have a surprise.
Oh, not now, Walter.
What?
Well, I mean you'll have to give me some time.
Time? What's the trouble?
No trouble. It's that genetic survey I've been working on.
What about it?
Well, I've finally gotten permission to study an actual living case. A specimen of imperfect genetic transmission.
Really?
Yes, they're bringing him up from the condemned cages on the lower level.
You will be careful, darling.
The supervisor says there's nothing to be afraid of. The specimen they're bringing is XJ12. It's been studied before many times and is quite well trained.
Well, I don't like it.
Nonsense, darling. I've been waiting for this opportunity for years. Oh, there's my door signal. I'll have to hang up, darling. See you later. Yes?
Professor Lois Burton?
Yes?
I'm from the Phylogenic Institute. Lower level.
Oh, then you brought me specimen XJ12.
May I come in?
By all means. Oh, how...
Horrible? It all depends on your viewpoint. I happen to have a twisted leg. My parents were genetically unsound.
But then you...
Yes. I am specimen XJ12.
I see.
I hope you aren't shocked.
No stable person permits feelings to enter into his work. I will admit to surprise. I was expecting something a little more, abnormal.
Sorry, I try to be as abnormal as possible. If I am, the Phylogenic Institute allows me out of the genetic cages every so often, so I can breathe the pure air of the upper levels and mingle with the genetically perfect.
You seem quite well educated.
I spent the first years of my life here in the upper levels.
How is that possible? They segregate imperfects.
As a small child, my mother concealed me from the director of selective heredity. I was brought up in secret. My mother actually, dreadful word, loved me.
I see. That would explain your obviously low threshold of emotional control.
If you choose to call it that. At first, you seemed to be struggling to repress a few feelings yourself.
We will confine ourselves to the impersonal aspects of our work.
As you please.
I shall require you as a demonstration for a lecture I'm delivering to one of my classes tomorrow.
At your service, Professor.
Sit here, please. Grip these electrodes tightly. I'm going to calibrate your electrochemical tension.
I'm quite familiar with the procedure. Oh! I realize that as an imperfect, I'm expendable. But I should hate to be electrocuted.
The charge is not lethal. Plus 15 surface tension.
You know, you have beautiful hair.
Plus 12 at a depth of 4 centimeters.
Lovely blue eyes. Crystal clear.
Plus 10, 7 centimeters.
Pretty. A perfect woman. Lovely, expressive hands. And a heart of stone. Like all the rest of you perfect survival types.
Try not to jump, sir, when the current strikes.
No feelings. Under control. Passed by the Director of Emotional Stability.
Shut up!
Maybe I was wrong. Maybe you have feelings.
That will be quite enough. I seem to sense an air of emotional tension.
Nothing, dear. This is a specimen XJ12.
Oh, I see. An inferior type.
Quite.
You, specimen. Can you understand me?
Yes.
Yes, what? Tell this dolt who I am, Lois.
This is a director of emotional stability for the Third Oblong. He also happens to be my selected genetic partner. You will address him as sir.
Yes, sir.
This creature seems quite impertinent.
He's only a specimen, darling.
I suppose. We'll use him and ship him back to the cages at the Institute. He's probably radioactive. You, specimen.
Mr. Director.
You will confine your speech to answering only those questions addressed to you. Understand?
Yes, sir. Perfectly.
Attention! Attention! The next demonstration will be conducted by Professor Lois Burton of the Institute of Genetics. Her topic, the probability of radioactive damage in the chromosome heredity of imperfect non-survival types. Professor Burton.
We are very fortunate today in having obtained a specimen of an imperfect genetic type through the good graces of the Phylogenic Institute. Moreover, this specimen has been trained to tell in his own words about the factors in his upbringing. Specimen XJ-12.
Thank you. My mother was a psychotechnician in the Fifth Oblong. My father was a historian specializing in the records of pre-atomic surface culture. In the earthquake of 2170, apparently some hard radiation filtered down through the tunnels and penetrated the Fifth Oblong. The effect on my hereditary factors is quite apparent in this twisted leg. I appreciate that you do not laugh. Most audiences seem compelled to laugh. Perhaps you are different. If so, perhaps you can be made to understand somehow what it means to be labeled an imperfect. Perhaps in some way I can penetrate the insulation with which the psychotechnicians, the drugs, and the glandular experts have surrounded your emotions.
Wait. As director of emotional stability for this Oblong, I order you to confine yourself to the subject.
My father taught me in the last days before he was executed that every human personality is born with certain inalienable natural rights. The right of free expression, the right to have feelings, and the right to mature, and above all, the right to be different from every other living organism, because every organism is different. I submit to you, distinguished students, that the attempt by this society to abridge these rights is a violation of nature. I say that the imperfects, the mutants, those who are different, have as much right to exist and be free as you. I say break open the cages. Free my people.
Stop him.
Give us back the right to be individuals.
Stop him.
I say...
Professor Burton, take this specimen back to your laboratory and confine him.
Yes, Mr. Director.
You, specimen, go quietly, I warn you.
I have nothing but contempt for your warnings.
I'll have you destroyed for this.
The specimen is unstable. He doesn't know what he's saying.
Then get him out of here, quickly. He's an affront to our genetic type.
Hold still while I bandage your head. He'll be all right.
I suppose you detest me for getting you into trouble.
Don't squirm.
Not that I blame you.
I don't detest you.
Oh.
In fact, I thought you quite magnificent.
You what?
As you spoke, something began to stir in me.
You don't hate me?
I've never felt so strange.
Tell me what you feel. If I moved you, then I must have moved the others, some of them at least.
I don't know quite how to explain it. A strange sympathy.
Compassion.
For some reason, I took pride in what you were doing. Seeing you stand up against them. Why do you look at me like that?
Because I can't help it.
I wish you wouldn't. You're only an imperfect, you know. You have no rights. Please, XJ-12.
My name is Oren.
Please.
Say it. Oren.
Oren?
Again.
Oren.
Lois.
Oren.
Lois, Lois, Lois.
What is it? Why do I feel this way?
In the cages, they call it love.
Love? We have have no such concept in the upper level.
You've destroyed it.
Would it be correct to say, I feel love for you?
It would be correct.
I feel love for you.
Darling, darling. Lois, what about Walter? You're going to marry him.
No.
You're genetically suited to each other.
I don't care. I won't marry him. There must be some other way.
But...
Walter!
Very touching. Very tender.
Walter, how could you spy?
In my capacity as Director of Emotional Stability, it is my duty to spy. Specimen XJ-12 will be disposed of quite systematically by the state. For the good of the state. For the good of the genetic code. And in the name of emotional stability. Come in, Lois. I wondered how long it would be before you came to my office.
Walter, I have to talk to you.
Go right ahead.
Walter, you mustn't destroy him. Send him back to the cages, but don't kill him.
You speak of destroying an inferior creature as if it were something unethical.
Walter, please, for my sake.
Lois, I understand that you've entered a plea for postponement of our marriage at the Records Bureau.
Yes, I was too upset to go through with it.
It came as a great disappointment to me. If you were married to me, you would be safe from influences such as this XJ-12. In which case, I might even be persuaded to send him back to the cages instead of having him destroyed. You see?
Yes. I see.
Think it over. Well, my dear?
When can we be married?
Soon. Tomorrow, if you like.
The sooner the better.
Lois. Lois, you make me very...
What about XJ-12?
Oh, I see. A bargain is a bargain. Let me talk to the custodian, please. Hello. This is the Director of Emotional Stability for the Third Oblong. I would like you to cancel the execution of specimen XJ-12. Yes. Yes, that's right. Turn him over to the security guard. He's to be remanded permanently to the genetic cages.
Let me talk to him, Walter.
My dear, I don't think...
Please, I want to be sure he's all right.
Very well. Hello. Connect a circuit in the cell block. I want to talk to XJ-12. Here you are, my dear.
Hello? Oren? Yes. No, I'm all right. How are you? Fine. Oren, I've been talking to Walter. He's going to send you back to the cages. Yes. Yes. No, I'm going to marry him. Because I want to. I'm not lying to you. I'm very happy. Yes. Yes, I've got to hang up now. Goodbye. Goodbye.
And now, Lois?
Walter, please, I've got to get back to the lab.
Of course. I'll pick you up in, say, an hour, and we'll make plans for the wedding. All right?
Yes. Yes, of course. Goodbye, Walter.
Hello. This is the Director of Emotional Stability again. I want you to cancel that last order. Proceed with the execution, but under conditions of absolute secrecy. No. Don't use the lethal chamber. Take him to the tunnels on the upper level. That's correct. Fine.
Mr. This way.
Where are you taking me?
You're being returned to the Phylogenic Institute. Orders from the Director of Emotional Stability. Into the elevator.
Very well. Why are we going toward the surface? The cages are on the lower levels.
Radiation check.
They've never done that before.
New procedure. All right. Walk.
Hawk, state your business.
I'm the custodian for the third oblong. This imperfect is my prisoner.
You can't go beyond this checkpoint. There's radioactivity in the tunnels.
This is a special mission, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I see. Well, just a moment, I'll open the airlock. Go ahead. You'll find two radiation suits in the chamber.
We will need only one.
So this is how they get rid of imperfects.
March inside. All right. Turn around.
Suppose I refuse?
It'll be less painful if you cooperate.
Before you dispose of me, could I give you a message for a friend?
That depends. What is the message?
This! Security! Help! Security!
What is it? What happened?
The prisoner, he struck me. Before I could recover, he escaped into the tunnels.
Well, he won't last long. If the radiation doesn't get him, he'll starve to death.
Can you go after him?
I could send a robot, but it isn't worth the trouble. There's no way back from the tunnels except through here. Only other direction he can go is toward the surface. The closer he gets, the hotter the radiation. No, I think you can consider your prisoner dead.
More wine, my dear?
No, thank you, Walter.
You look very beautiful, my dear. Very beautiful.
Thank you.
These hydroponic fruits are delicious, aren't they? The wedding will just be a small affair. I've arranged for a few friends. The director of endocrine control, the chief of the security guards, one or two assistants to high council members.
Walter, did...
Yes?
Was he returned to the cages?
Now, why must you spoil this lovely dinner by bringing that up?
Was he, Walter?
Well...
Was he?
Well, as a matter of fact, there was a little difficulty.
Difficulty?
Yes. You see, he escaped.
Escaped?
He struck a guard and ran off into the tunnels.
The tunnels? But that's death.
He's free to return any time he chooses.
When did it happen?
Just a few hours ago, as a matter of fact.
Walter...
Now, don't become upset again, darling.
You planned it, didn't you, Walter?
Stability, darling. Stability.
Stability. Stability. Is that all I'm to hear from you for the rest of my life?
Darling.
Here's what I think of stability.
Well, we're not to be married. I'd be compelled to turn you over to the endocrine surgeons for doing that.
Well, you can go right ahead. Because we aren't going to be married.
Checkpoint.
This is the Director of Emotional Security.
Yes, sir.
If Professor Burton tries to pass the checkpoint, I want to take it into custody.
Well, Professor Burton just passed, sir. She said
you idiot.
But she said
I don't care what she said. Stop her. Send robots after her. Get her back. I'll have you destroyed as incompetent if you fail.
Yes, sir. At once, sir. Robot control. Checkpoint to robot control. Order out all televocal robots into the tunnels. Have them bring back any humans. This is a first priority order.
Why did you come here? It's suicide.
I had to. Darling, are you all right?
So far.
You've got to turn back. Give yourself up.
They'll kill me.
You can't stay here. The radiation is +4 at this point. It gets worse as you approach the surface.
Go back, darling.
What will you do?
I'm going ahead.
But you can't.
I can. I'm going to the surface.
Not even the robots can survive it.
At least I'll be the first human in 1,100 years to see what the surface of the Earth looks like.
Come back with me.
No, darling.
Then I'm going with you.
Lois.
Don't try to stop me, darling. There's nothing to go back to now. Nothing but Walter and emotional stability.
Lois, you really want to come with me?
Yes.
You know what it means.
I don't care.
Oh, darling, I can't let you go.
Orin, I love you. See, I know how to say it now.
Say it again.
Orin, I love you.
Lois. Lois, what's that?
It sounds... Oh, Orin, it's the robot control. It's looking for us.
Come on. We've got to hurry. This way. Hurry. It can't be much further, darling.
The robot is gaining.
Here, let me help you.
I can't. I just can't.
All right, darling. We'll stop here. We may as well wait for it.
Oh, Orin. It's coming. I can see it's light now.
Darling, listen. It stopped.
The lights are swinging around. Orin, it sees us.
Come on, darling. One last effort. Come on, run. Look ahead. You can see the lights reflecting from something.
It looks like a door.
It is. No, it's a heavy lead door.
There's a lever. Hurry.
Come on through. Lois, there must be some way to close it. Here.
Let me help you.
It won't get through that. It's solid lead.
Orin, where are we?
I don't know.
Look, up there, a huge round light.
Lois.
Yes, Orin?
That's Luna. The moon. We're on the surface.
How red everything looks. How it glows.
It's the radioactivity.
Quiet, peaceful, deadly.
Oh, darling. Sit here and rest a while.
Put your arm around me. Orin, I'm afraid. Orin, we're going to die.
Don't think about it. Just think about us alone. The first humans to stand on the surface of Earth in 2,000 years. Lois, that door must have been placed there by the last handful of survivors who went underground after the atomic wars. Those are the lights. The small ones. They must be stars.
Orin, I'm so tired.
Go to sleep, darling. Put your head on my shoulder and sleep.
Hold me, Orin. Hold me very close. Wake up.
What is it?
Look, it's light.
What?
The whole universe is light. Oh, Orin, how beautiful. Look.
By all the laws of nature, we should be dead. Lois, no life could survive this.
By all the laws of nature. Orin.
What is it?
We're not dead. This is Earth and we're alive. We're not going to die.
But the radiation... It's present. You can see its effects.
Orin, did you ever hear of adaptation?
What?
There is a natural law of adaptation by which an organism will try to adjust itself to its environment by changing. It's called a geotropism.
I don't see what that has to do with...
All these generations, we've been bombarded by radiation filtering down through the Earth. Each successive generation must have inherited some degree of immunity to the effects of radiation.
And you think that...
Orin, it can't hurt us. Don't you see? We're immune. We're probably the first generation to inherit sufficient immunity.
But if that's true, then we can transmit that immunity. We can pass it along to our children.
Come on, darling. We'll have to find food and water.
The practical wife. Oh, wait a minute, darling.
What are you doing with that rock?
I want to scratch something on the outside of this lead door.
Lois and Orrin.
41-95 A.D.
Hello, tomorrow.
Tonight, Dimension X, the program of the future, has introduced a new star of the future, Miss Nancy Olson. Miss Olson appeared by courtesy of Paramount Pictures and may currently be seen in their production, Sunset Boulevard. Next week on Dimension X, the strange and sinister story of Dr. Grimshaw's Sanitarium.
Tonight, Dimension X has transcribed Hello Tomorrow, written by George Lefferts. Appearing with Nancy Olson were Santos Ortega as Walter and Donald Buca as Orrin. Your narrator was Norman Rose. Music by Albert Berman. Engineer Bill Chambers. Dimension X is produced by Van Woodward and directed by Edward King.
Enjoy Bob Hope and Baby Snooks when they return this fall on NBC.
Dimension X on Tuned to Yesterday from September 15th, 1950 on NBC. And that closes this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.